You're listening to the Live Free Now Show with John Bush, bringing you the news, views, tips, and tools you can use to live a free and prosperous life. Find us online at livefreenow.show. Subscribe to the podcast feed for the latest episodes. And now your host, John Bush.
Hey there, John Bush, to talk to you about the coronavirus, the pandemic, the response by the government, by the people, and I'd like to share an alternative perspective, an alternative strategy on how things could go differently, could have gone differently, in my opinion. I also want to share some solutions and what we can do in our own personal lives and what we can do collectively in order to minimize the impact on us, in order to prepare for future freakouts like this. Everyone, let me know in the comments if you can hear me okay and if the quality's coming through okay. I don't know why I have these on. I can't hear anything from them. So I, in large part, didn't really take an opinion on what we ought to do. More so lately, I haven't been doing a lot of ought to's and should'as. In my life, I used to be all about the analysis and public policy and government this, should have done that, and vote for this politician because he wants to do things and thinks that we should do things this way. But whenever I had kids and really started focusing on entrepreneurship and solutions, it was like, okay, things are happening in the world. Now, what are we going to do about it? And so when this coronavirus stuff came along, I didn't really come out and say, well, the government and the public and in mass society, we should be handling it like this. We ought to do things this way. I wanted to kind of remain sensitive because people are dying. People are freaking out. There's all this judgment and shame going on right now. And I do recognize that there is a great cause for concern for a great many of people. But having sat back, I know there's a lot of people, there were two camps always. There was like, this is a really huge deal. We need to shelter in place. I hope the government does more. I'm really concerned and really afraid for my health and the health of our community and my family. And on the extreme, there were like, shelter in. The government needs to save us. You guys, you are evil if you don't follow the government line. And on the other extreme, they were like, this is a total hoax, total conspiracy. Have you ever even seen anyone that has coronavirus? This is total fraud. We need to go about our lives, so on and so forth. And those quick parties, these are people that are kind of like zealous and extremists. And they just jump in without necessarily surveying what the heck is really going on. So rather than jump into one of those camps, that's not really my style lately. It used to be my style. I was quick to form an opinion and shove it down your throat. I just took a step back and was like, let's kind of see what's going on here. And with the pandemic going on for around a month now in the States and longer across the world, I think I've finally formulated an opinion. And I wrote this opinion out and shared it on my Facebook. And so I'm going to share that now. My kids are here. They're hanging out with my girlfriend, so hopefully they don't barge in. That may interrupt things, but that's how we're doing it. And so here's my opinion. I'm just going to read it for you. I've largely sat on the sidelines and not really giving a shoulda opinion on COVID-19 and the government's response, in part because I'm not a public health official and I don't have a say in how things are handled, but mostly because my focus in life has lately been on solutions, how to navigate the world events in the best interest of my family, my community, and myself. But after seeing all the craziness taking place in our world and the shaming and badgering happening to those who have an opinion that is contrary to the party line, I feel compelled to share my thoughts. So here's my thoughts. The Texas mortality right now is around 1.3%. I believe it's around 1.5% nationally, which is 10 times that of flu-like illnesses nationally, which is around 0.13. Not surprisingly, the deaths from flu-like illnesses also mirror the ages of those that are affected most and that die from COVID-19. Additionally, Italy is now reporting that 99% of the deaths in Italy came from those that had one or more pre-existing conditions. While my opinion on the matter is evolving and as new information comes out, and I'm not an epidemiologist, it is now my belief that a more effective strategy than the strategy that most governments are taking would have been, rather than shelter in everyone, to shelter in those vulnerable and susceptible populations. Rather than sheltering everyone, sheltering in those vulnerable and susceptible populations, other people, everybody bracing for the impact, but people going about their lives, potentially getting COVID, more people getting COVID, but developing immunities. I also took a position too, like I've been following conspiracies and the governments and supranational governments and elites, power elites' goal to create totalitarian, top-down control grid, technocratic dictatorships. I've been studying that since 2002. This is also something I didn't take an opinion on. I've kind of stepped back from the conspiracy thing because I did the 9/11 truth thing for like a decade and was like shouting 9/11 was an inside job and shoving it down the throats of friends, family, coworkers. And then, you know, that was a tough job back in 2002. I tell you what, to convince people that 9/11 was carried out by criminal elements operating within our own government and the intelligence agencies of our government and other governments, 2002, when everyone was high patriot mode. But now it seems like a good number of people know that 9/11 was a false flag, yet they don't do anything about it. And those that perpetrated it or suspected to perpetrated it are still in power, right? So when it came to the conspiracy thing, I'm like, man, you know, it's great and it's fun to understand how the world goes on. And yes, it could help turn people against government as far from an anarchist strategic perspective for them to truly grasp what government is capable of. But at the end of the day, I was focused more on solutions and stuff. But now it's like, man, there's a problem reaction solution paradigm, which we're going to talk more about, where the government either creates the problem or takes advantages of the problem, foments a reaction through their mainstream media, and then brings in their solution. In the case of 9/11, it was 9/11 false flag, extravagant pictures, fires, flame. The reaction was blame Al-Qaeda, get the American public into a frenzy of fear and panic and xenophobia against Muslims, Islamophobia. The solution was we need to invade foreign wars and we need to pass the Patriot Act, Military Defense Authorization Act, and indefinite suspension, ramp up the NSA, so on and so forth. Same thing with this. So whether COVID-19 is a bioweapon or not, if it's completely natural, that's the problem. The government is ramping it up, creating more of a problem and blowing up the reaction through the mainstream media, which in large part is sensationalizing, which we can't blame them. Like that's how advertising sells and people are tuned in. And then the reaction this time around is going to be the furthering of the police state, clampdowns, taking a temperature on the public and how much they will take. And right now we have like a hardcore paternal and nanny state that's controlling every aspect of our lives. And then the big thing on the flip side, it's also going to be the furthering of a global government and global cooperation. And one of the big things that's going to come out of it, I think, is the surveillance state and ID 2020 and tracking people and they're taking their temperature through camera imaging and having a smartphone device and mass vaccination. And this is also going to get people further into the vaccine agenda right when the anti-vax movement was really starting to take effect. So that's the kind of stuff that I want to talk about. That's the opinion that I took. I shared it on my wall. And I also want to point out that this doesn't mean that I think we should all go frolic in the streets. And the real reasons why I felt motivated to really be more vocal about this is because when people are posting stuff and conversations are being had, and I take an opinion that's like, well, you know, 80% of the people that come down with COVID-19, we're going to cover this more in depth, have little to no side effects whatsoever. And it's a very small percentage that have severe side effects. And it's a very small percentage also that actually end up dying, which, you know, we don't want to take that lightly. This is really important. This is a public health crisis. We do need to shift the way that we're living. And I take those opinions in a very objective way. I'm not on this side of the aisle here. I guess it was this side that's trying to like ram things down people's throat. And that's not my style anymore. Although maybe I could lean a little bit more towards that to be more effective in my communication with people, because sometimes people need a swift kick in the balls and a slap in the face. But I was just being reasonable and objective and offering a countering opinion to that prevailing status quo opinion. And like, I'm getting shamed. My partner, for example, she works at a tiny home community and they do an event every month. and they have a little budget to do like a social gathering for the residents. And this month she wanted to shift that. And instead of doing like a little party or something, they wanted to go plant some vegetables in the big open air farm across the street. And the idea was, we only need two or three volunteers this time, and we will space out the raised bed, garden bed. So just one person to bed. So we're honoring the 6 feet apart and distancing. And she got shamed and said she was irresponsible by some of the residents. And it's this type of thing that made me be like, okay, I think I've gotten a little bit perturbed and frustrated and annoyed. So I'm going to speak my mind. So as I said, here's what we know now that there's more data rolling in, right? Here's what is being shared online. Check out this study right here, this research paper. This is coming out of based on information from China. And the headline is, the biggest breakdown yet of novel coronaviruses cases suggests that 80% are mild. Some patients never show symptoms. Now, some people might say, well, that's why we need to lock down, because there's people walking around without symptoms. They're asymptomatic and they're further spreading it. And that is a good point. But check this out. The research found that 80% of the confirmed cases were mild. Those patients might experience a fever or dry cough, but weren't likely to have difficulty breathing or develop a severe lung infection. So they also found that infected people could show no symptoms at all. That was with the case of 1.2%. I don't know how they would. I guess they tested so many people there in China, because people in the states that are getting tested that have symptoms even aren't even getting tested, like here in Austin. Unless you have extreme severe symptoms and you're one of these susceptible populations, which is people that have pre-existing conditions, people that are 60, 70, and 80 years older especially, they're not even really doling out the test. And so with that information, then you know, you compare it to the death rate of the flu or flu-like illnesses. And this was research. This isn't just me making these numbers up. And the mortality rate was 0.13. Here in the U.S., the mortality rate so far, this is with the number of cases that we have, is 1.5%. Okay. You take the number of cases, you take the number of people that died in a given geographic area, divide it by the number of cases, and then you multiply that number by 100 to get a percentage, and you get 1.5%, the mortality rate, 1.23% in Texas. And in the state of Texas, it's also, I'm sorry, nationally, it's 0.13% of the people that die from the flu. So that's 10 times as much. And you know what you come to find out? The age range of the people that are dying from the flu happens to be the same age range of most of the people that are dying from COVID-19, okay? Then we also find, based on Italy's numbers, and they had a bunch of problems in Italy. There's a much older population. A lot of people smoke in Italy. 99% of those who died from the virus had other illnesses. Again, this is data. Now that we have more data, we can now maybe take a little bit of a step back and see if we need to shift our public policy, right? So here we go. 0.8%, that's the 1%, had no illnesses. 25.1 had one other. 25.6 had two other. 48.5 had three other. So if I were a public policy expert or a public policy, if I was a public health official making these big decisions, like my big water thing. This used to be cool, like in the party days when you'd be like at a keg party, you're like, yeah, this is my big beer, but I don't really drink anymore. So now it's water, and I'm chugging water because drinking a lot of water is good for your system, especially in these crazy times. You see that number? Half of the people had three or more illnesses. So here's what I think would have been a better strategy than sheltering in almost everybody and completely decimating the economy. And I'm not going to get put into that false dichotomy where it's like, oh, I think the economy is more important than a personal life, right? That I'm not taking that judgment. That's not what I do think. That's a false dichotomy. Either we shelter everyone in and save lives, or we shelter no one, or we shelter everyone in, save lives and destroy the economy, or we let everyone go about their lives, save the economy, but everyone dies. That's a false dichotomy. There's a middle path, like our good friend the Buddha said. The middle path would be, how about we isolate those individuals that are most susceptible to extreme adverse effects of coronavirus, even death. And in that regard, yes, that's still going to be a big group of people. And I've had folks that are older that are coming on, like I make a reasonable position like that. And I said, I think would have been a more rational thing to do. And they're like, you're saying our lives don't matter. And what about, I'm an old person, you don't care about me? And it's like, no, that's not what's being said here. First of all, you're sheltered in anyway. Second of all, I have many older folk in my life, like my grandparents and family members, and even family members that are old and have pre-existing conditions. Nobody wants anyone to die here. Everyone's all worked up in a frenzy, getting all extreme reactionary. The media is in large part responsible for that. And it makes it difficult to have a cold, calm, collected, logical, rational conversation, which is exactly what I'm trying to do here. And I would encourage you in the viewership to do the same thing. Even if someone's all frenzied up, just be like, hold on, can we just take a step back, maybe take a deep breath? And let's recenter here so we can continue our conversation. So I believe that would have been a better public policy. And then when it comes to the question of economy versus lives, I hate to break it to you, but the two are inextricably tied together. It's through our personal economy and through the meta national and global economy that people are able to live their life by fulfilling their needs for shelter, productivity, work, food. We can't just rely on the government to be bailing people out and doling out $1,200 checks and doling out trillions of dollars to big banks and big corporations, because that has negative effects. And the worst case scenario here is not only do people continue to die from this coronavirus, but because there's been so much BS stimulation and inflation of the money supply in the United States and other countries, that we have a genuine total collapse. Now, I have been of that mindset since 2006. That's when I first got into prepping. When I thought there was going to be a financial collapse, I saw the writing on the wall, and I thought there was going to be a total societal collapse. Now, we did have a big financial crisis. We didn't have the resulting societal collapse. We didn't have the full-blown financial crisis. And to put things in perspective, you know, back when I would shove things down people's throat, and I'd like shove things down my dad's throat, right? And it's like this young punk kid, and my dad's like all older and wise. And he's like, you know, John, I could go up in the attic and get you a book called How to Profit from the Financial Collapse that was written in 1978. And that was like, oh, you know, he's got a point. Maybe things aren't so crazy. But I realized with further analysis that this is all the same collapse. The can's being kicked down the road because the Federal Reserve and the federal government does funny money, inflating the economy, kicking the can down the road. But eventually the chickens are going to come home to roost. I think that's the expression. And the mofo is going to collapse in of its own weight. The foundation of the economic house in the United States of America, and the entire global economy for that matter, is very fragile, with cracked foundation, with all sorts of stability problems. And rather than letting the whole thing come down or building another economy, which is what we should do, which I'm going to talk about freedom cells and agorism, building the alternative institutions over here, they're just like propping up 2x4s on the side. It's but eventually, boom, the whole thing's going to come crashing down. And you want to talk about public health, and you want to talk about death when we have another Great Depression, where people can't feed themselves, where people, because they haven't been able to be productive for months or years on end, are committing suicide. It's not an either or thing. We need to look at things in a totality kind of way, in a holistic approach. And that's what I'm spewing here. So first of all, that's the approach that I wanted to take. And then, then what happens? Okay, so we isolate those that are susceptible. I would like to point out that, yes, these people, the 20% or the 1%, the people that have pre-existing conditions. So it's like, all right, we have a public health crisis. We saw what happened in China. We have a virus that appears to be at least 10 times as deadly than the flu and flu-like illnesses. This is a big deal. We need to make some changes. Okay, now that we have some data coming out of China, we see that 80% of the people that get the virus have little to no symptoms, mild symptoms. Okay, so those people, we're not talking about them right now. We're talking about the people that we want to save, our grandparents, the boomer generation, those that are in great positions of power, those that are running a good chunk of the economy, right? So we have those folks shelter in. And then if I'm an anarchist free market guy, so I'm not for any stimulus or anything, but if we are to have stimulus, it would be much easier for society through these entitlement programs and stimulus to help this smaller group, rather than having to pump out $2 trillion in the stimulus package and all sorts of bailouts, right? Most of these industries would still be able to function. And then you protect this group, and we do teleconferencing with this group. It'd be easier to deliver supplies to this group. There's not a total freak out. And then another big thing why this whole thing is all off and backwards, and this is the big problem, and I can talk about it. Actually, you know what? We're powerful, beautiful, free human beings, as my good friend Derek Bros says, and I do think that we can make a change. Start by the rumblings, right? And so shout out Conscious Resistance, right? And so we all need to take a big, hard look in the mirror and take stock of our health, because the system of health that we have in the Western world, which is allopathic reactionary medicine, and the dietary system and the fast food and the pounding of sugars and the freaking soda can that has 48 grams of sugar and the pumping full of pharmaceuticals and vaccine, it is no wonder that there's so many people that have pre-existing conditions that creates life-threatening scenarios, right? So if we want to avoid this in the future for ourselves and for society as a whole, it's extremely important that we take stock of where we're at and we make big time changes in our own lives and we talk to our friends and family about these big time changes. I wanted to show you guys the Health Freedom Report. This is a news aggregation site, much like the Drudge Report. And it has different news going on with Corona and everything from a different perspective. But now that I'm talking about this, I want to share this article here from Joel Salatin. And he talks about everybody's just going to be waiting around for the vaccine. But really, what about the public? What about a public health mission going on where we help and encourage people to boost their immune systems? Instead, everybody's all jacked up on white sugar. Interestingly, all the experts are scrambling for a vaccine to solve it. Why don't we have a national effort to boost everyone's immune system? This might be a good time to start such a campaign. And he's right. Everyone, so the policy is like shelter in, don't go outside so we don't spread the virus, and let's all wait 18 months until a vaccine is developed. And again, what I think the policy should have been would be shelter in those susceptible populations, which is a minority of the population. Everyone else develop immunity, get antibodies. And he also had a very controversial essay that he wrote, a blog, where he says that he wants to get coronavirus. We have it here as one of our trending news. Joel Salatin, I want coronavirus. He's like, folks, just let's get it and get over with. Because here's the problem with this paradigm that we're engaged in. He caught a lot of flack for this, big time flack. Okay, then bring it on. I'm healthy, so I want to get immune and allay my concerns. The mass hysteria among the general populace won't get us through it. It'll only postpone the immunity exercise. And you know what? He's right. What are we doing? It's the virus is going to come back. And in fact, the 1918 Spanish flu, which they say Spanish flu because it emanated out of Spain, apparently, but there's research that shows it may have emanated out of Kansas.
I watched the documentary on YouTube. That's a lot, so must be true.
I'm just kidding. It's going to come back. And then what are we going to do? Freak out again? And let's say that we just slowly start coming out of the woodwork in another 2 weeks or a month or something. More people are going to get the virus. And then it's going to work its way around the globe. It's going to mutate. It's going to evolve. Are we just going to keep hiding in our homes en masse? Or are we going to take a reasonable, practical perspective, which again, I'm not in Trump's position. I'm not in the governor of Texas's position. So, but I can just speak my mind. I don't know if, you know, I don't think voting's the right solution. We all need to do what we can to change our lives and share these things. But the proper solution in this case would have been shelter in the susceptible populations. Let everyone else get out there, develop antibodies. And for those that get sick, then take them to the hospital. And, you know, when everyone was just out and about, it's those susceptible populations that are most likely to go to the hospital. Another big problem, too, with this reactionary medicine paradigm is like I've been on a alternative medicine kick. And I think I've taken antibiotics once in like the past decade. It's resulted in this. You can see that tooth is gone there. I had a wisdom tooth a while back and it would always get infected like twice a year. And I would use a tooth pack remedy with colloidal silver, activated charcoal, bentonite clay, and xylitol. It would break down the infection, pull out the bacteria and all the nasty stuff. And it would work every time. Just pack it on for a few days. But then it stopped working and the infection got so bad, my jaw started getting swollen. It was bad news bears. So I had to get the tooth pulled and had to get antibiotics. But I digress. Everyone is so quick to go to the doctor, to go to the hospital. That's the reason why these institutions are being overwhelmed, in my opinion. Those are the two big concerns here with coronavirus, right? I'm not one of the guys that says it's a hoax and that we shouldn't be concerned. We should frolic in the streets, spitting and slobbering all over the door handles. That's not me. Nobody's really saying that. But the big concern is there are susceptible populations, and the virus is 10 times more deadly. And those susceptible populations, whether it's old age, and not necessarily old age, but old age and unhealth, and especially pre-existing conditions, they have a good chance that they could die, right? And then the second problem is the medical institutions are being overwhelmed. You know, one way to solve the second problem is to deregulate, to get government out of the way. All these people are like, we need socialized medicine. We need the government to come save us. There's so many regulations that have prevented a rapid response. And then people's gut reaction is to blame Trump for the lack of testing and stuff. Trump had to go in. And one phenomenon that I find myself like defending Trump more often than I usually do, because I'm not a big Trump guy. I'm not a Trump fan. I don't support authoritarians in any respects. I do appreciate that he represents a divergence from the status quo of the deep state, which we all used to call the shadow government. I don't think he's in bed with them. Some people, even I was listening to David Icke, he had a really good interview on London Real about the coronavirus stuff, which had some really interesting perspectives. He thinks that he's just a puppet for the permanent government, as he calls it. I think he's a divergence. But either way, everyone's like, oh, it's Trump's fault that we don't have all these tests. And it's like, no, Trump had to deregulate the entire health industry in many ways in order to allow for the testing to be created. And then the FDA shutting down a personal home test, and doctors, medical hospitals aren't able to treat certain patients in a certain area of the hospital. That's a federal response. A doctor that's licensed in Kansas can't go practice in Missouri. Like, that's the big problem. You want to make it so hospitals in the future will be more able to handle the influx of patients should there be another pandemic. You need to deregulate, let the market innovate, and handle those consumer needs. A lot of people may not appreciate that, but whatever we're doing right now, which is this like fascist, corporatist, public-private system, is not working. Oh, okay, so that's what I think as far as a public health policy would be a better idea to do. Now let's talk about another response, the financial thing. So you have this stimulus package hasn't gone through the House, and good old Thomas Massie, which my good friend, this really wealthy guy that's young and did a lot of great work, he started this super PAC, and he actually helped Thomas Massie to get elected. Thomas Massie, they call him Mr. No, like Dr. No, Ron Paul, because he shoots down stuff. He's actually like a genuinely consistent congressman. And he's maybe the one no vote on this stimulus package. And everyone's going to hate him. The Republican Party is going to hate him. But what they're essentially doing is creating a $2 trillion stimulus, and a bunch of the money is going to big corporations and big industries, even yachts and, well, what do you call them? Cruises, and these big industries that aren't supporting the little guy. And I don't have any problem with wealthy people or anything, but if there is to be a stimulus, perhaps it should help the little guy more than helping the big guy. And it's not just the stimulus, right? Everyone's focused on the stimulus because the public in large part doesn't really understand how the quantitative easing and the discount window works with the Federal Reserve. But the Federal Reserve's already pumped out well more trillions than this $2 trillion package. And the money isn't going directly to the consumer to help the little guy for taking the responsibility to shelter in and taking that hit on his pocketbook, right? The money's going in large part to big corporations. So here we have $560 billion would be going to the individuals in the form of this stimulus, and who knows when it's going to come through. Then there's large corporations getting $500 billion, small businesses getting $377 billion, and that's just not stimulus. I'm not a fan of stimulus. That's not how free markets work. And then you have, this is like loans. These are loans that the businesses are getting. They're going to have to pay back relief from existing loans. That's going to hurt the banks. That's why the banks are getting bailed out. Here's all this money going for COVID-19 response, presumably creating supplies and stuff. There's money that's going to go help schools get back in order, help daycares get back in order. Here's going to further entitlement programs, help beef up people that are out of work. So this is a pretty cool little chart, but as you can see, it's not all stimulus for the people, but that's not even something that I advocate. Honestly, this whole thing is a giant boondoggle, and there's like pork getting included in the whole thing. And this, you can't just add $2 trillion to the economy. What this represents isn't $2 trillion new money or $2 trillion new shifting of money from here to there, or like we're bringing the troops back and we're cutting down our defense spending so we can help people here. No, what this represents is debt. And I correct myself, money, all money in the U.S. is debt. Every dollar you have is a Federal Reserve note that represents debt, credit that was given to the United States Treasury Department from the Federal Reserve Bank. This is $2 trillion right here. This is $6.2 trillion that the Federal Reserve has already pumped into the economy, loaning money to banks. And then, I don't know, maybe there's some Austrian economists that can clear this up for me. The way that banking works in this country is through a system called fractional reserve banking. So if a bank has $10,000 on loan, people deposit $10,000 in their savings accounts, the bank can then go out and loan $100,000. So I'm not sure if this is how it works, but once that money trickles down, the trillions of dollars trickles down to the actual banks, they put that money in their deposits, they can then go out and loan like 10 times that amount. This creates inflation. This is why people are like, we can't go back to work. Just take this little hit on your pocketbook. Government's going to support us. We're going to get our $1,200 checks, right? I said the other day, we're all survivalists now. It's also like, we're all socialists now, because I'm sure all these Trump supporters are just waiting for that check. Give me that check. America, damn communist over there in China, socialist. And then they're like, let's bring in some socialism and communism. You can't just stimulate the economy like that and not expect there to be long-term repercussions on the overall economic outlook, not to mention the existing mountains of debt that this country already has. It's going to be bad news bears, man. All right, now let's talk about problem, reaction, solution. So whether or not this was a man-made crisis, like a false flag terror attack or some sort of bioweapon, problem, reaction, solution, the Hegelian dialectic, right? Hegel and Marx, he talked about how societies shift and how people can shift things. And it was through the thesis, the antithesis, and then the synthesis. This is where problem, reaction, solution comes from. The thesis is like, we have this coronavirus, people are dying, it's a huge public health threat. The antithesis is the reaction. It's like, oh my God, we need to freak out. Somebody needs to do something about it. The synthesis is like, okay, let's come together and let's take power and take control. Problem, reaction, solution. Who stands to benefit? Qui bono? Who's going to benefit from this? Well, for one, the pharmaceutical companies and the vaccine industry are going to benefit big time. There's going to be a major setback for civil liberties, libertarians, anarchists, and natural health proponents, and the anti-vax movement, because people have been so worked up into a frenzy and are so freaking scared that they are going to be begging for this vaccine. And of course, the pharmaceutical industry. And the idea, my public health plan there, where you isolate the vulnerable, susceptible populations and let everyone get immunity, that goes against, we need to stay scared so we can all get this vaccine when it comes around. So the vaccine companies stand to benefit. What else stands to benefit is this idea of ID 2020. It is a fact that there is a small group of very powerful people that are leveraging public institutions and private institutions, governments, banks, media, large corporations, with the goal of creating a supranational, above national governments, totalitarian, technocratic dictatorship of a global government. That's a fact. If you're watching this on the Conscious Resistance, you're probably well aware of that. One of the desires of this network, this cabal, this shadow government, some people call it the Illuminati, is to track all human beings. Essentially, what they want to do is end the cycle of history, really, end the cycle of revolutions whereby the people are tyrannized and then they take up arms, they overthrow governments, and they replace the existing power infrastructure, the ruling class. They want to create an environment where the herd, the public, is more easily ruled over without having this threat of revolution. In order to do that, one of their goals is to reduce the size of the population and to be able to control the population better. And this is where we see Agenda 21, which is now like Agenda 2030 coming along, where they want to section off large parts of the population to rewild it so the wildlife can flow again. And so human beings can be cordoned off in small little itty bitty super cities. They can be tracked, traced, and controlled. And now we see problem, reaction, solution. So whether this was purposeful or not, the powers that be, including Bill Gates, who helped to finance this Event 201, which took place last year, which was planning for a global pandemic and how they were going to respond. Now, a lot of conspiracy theorists will jump there and say, oh, they had this Event 201 already, therefore this whole thing was contrived. And I don't think it's unheard of that the governments and private sector would be working together to plan for the next pandemic, because we have pandemics that have been taking place like SARS and Ebola. Nonetheless, there a lot of people are like, okay, when this happens again, how can we leverage it? How can we use it to our advantage? And one of those ways is through this program called ID 2020. And when you look at who it is, it's a who's who, this conglomeration of companies. Identity is vital for political, economic, and social opportunity, but systems of identification are archaic, insecure, lack adequate privacy protection, and for over a billion people, inaccessible. Digital identity is being defined now, and we need to get it right. Now, for all the cryptocurrency folks out there, they're talking about using blockchain technology to create this global identification program. And the beauty of blockchain technology is that it can be released upon the world and not controlled, and it can be decentralized and peer-to-peer. But this is very much not going to be that. This is going to be the use of a blockchain in order to track, control, and identify the entire public. And you're like, okay, let's check out who the alliance is so we can really just see what the heck's going on. And the alliance, you know, just anytime you see the Rockefeller Foundation, for those of you who don't know, since 1913, what happened in 1913? Oh, I don't know. The Federal Reserve Bank, the Federal Reserve Act, the income tax, also the passing of the 17th Amendment, which took away the state governments from electing the senators and further centralized power in the federal government. The Rockefeller Foundation is bad news. David Rockefeller is also the guy that financed the United Nations building. And to go back to that plan that I talked about to create a global government, the Rockefellers have in large part been leading the charge, financing institutions. The Rockefellers were also responsible for the centralization of agriculture through a program through the Rockefeller Foundation that they thought would be like, oh my God, we're going to feed all these people. But really they created monocrops and bastardized the soil, destroying nutrients through the chemicals and creating these monocrops, the exact opposite of permaculture, which is more resilient, which is a better way to feed more people, and top-down hierarchical structure. Interestingly enough, when it comes to public health, the Rockefeller Foundation is also responsible for the inverse relationship between Western allopathic reactionary medicine and Eastern natural medicine, which is more of a foundational holistic preventative approach. It was the Rockefeller Foundation that financed health schools and medical colleges that really played up this Western allopathic approach. It used to be in hospitals, there were two different wings. There was the Western surgery reactive wing, and then there was the Eastern preventative diet nutrition wing. And because of the Rockefellers' millions and billions of dollars that got put into this to shift society, that's what they do through these tax-exempt foundations. They slowly started minimizing this one. Maybe I switched whichever wing it was. They moved the wing from the left to the right, and they grew the allopathic Western medicine. So that's the freaking Rockefeller Foundation. And, you know, I'm not as big of a researcher these days to tell you what this Gavi Vaccine Alliance. What could vaccinators and vaccine corporations want possibly with the ID 2020 program to have an ID identification for every single person in the world? I don't know. Maybe it would tell you if you've taken your vaccine or not. Maybe like they're trying to do with the Real ID program. They already rolled this out in China, right? And everyone's like, China's the big energy. China, the enemy. China's the proving ground. Maybe they want to create a program like they're doing with the Real ID Act. If you don't have your Real ID, let me show you mine. I succumbed. I used to not have driver's license. Let me see if I can cover up everything. I used to not do the driver's license. See that little star there? Can you see that? That star means that this is Real ID compliant. I used to not have a driver's license. I used to have much more of a risk. I have more of a risk aversion now than I used to, now that I have kids. And there was like a 2 or 3 year period where I didn't drive around with a driver's license, no registration, no inspection, would get pulled over, just go fight it in court and stuff. I can't do that now. But when I went to go renew my driver's license, it was Real ID compliant. So what they say is if you don't have a Real ID compliant driver's license, you can't enter federal buildings like a courthouse. Who would want to go there anyway? Or, I mean, what would happen if you have a subpoena and then you don't have your Real ID? That's a little conflict. You can't fly either is what they're trying to say. Now, of course, Trump had to delay this because of all the stuff going on. But what if the idea was if you don't have your vaccines up to date, then you can't leave the country or you can't board on a plane. And that before that would be like, oh, that's far-fetched. But now we see the general public. Another reason why I wanted to do this video and speak more vocal is because now we see people that are begging for their tyranny and begging for their chains. And just like Senator Amidala said, so this is how liberty dies to the sound of thunderous applause. This is a big deal. And now that the problem and the reaction is in place, the solution is going to be more easily accepted, if not begged for. So what these crazy conspiracy theorists have been talking about for decades now, we all see coming to fruition before our very eyes. And who else is involved? Mr. Bill Gates of Microsoft. Microsoft, I mean, I don't know, call me a freaking hypocrite here, but I like my Windows 10 computer, so I don't know how to have a massive computing system. I guess I could do Linux, but I never really jived with that because it's difficult and I like would get all hung up. Bill Gates, of course, is a billionaire philanthropist that's really pushing vaccines, that has a lot of ties to eugenicist movements, and that was a chief architect of the Event 201, chief architect of ID 2020, and this effort. So we have a conglomeration of corporations, public institutions, billionaire foundations that are all coming together saying we need to identify every single person on the globe. That movement is going to have massive strides because of coronavirus. All right. I think it's time to get into solutions because, you know, the lockdown thing too. The government, we're going to get into solutions in one sec. First, let's throw this out there. Those in power, the ruling class, remember earlier how I said that the ruling class, these conspirators want to create an environment whereby the masses are no longer able to revolt and rise up and they can have a little bit of stability in their rule, because that's how I define history. Like history is a series of revolutions, not just successions and bloodlines, but also revolutions that shift things. And Trump, like him or not, he is a point in history where the Clinton, Obama, Bush, Deep State, Bilderberg, Council on Foreign Relations faction, right? This Anglo-American establishment faction was kind of like, whoa, we hit a little fork in the road. And maybe some speculation, maybe this all came out at a period where Trump had what seemed to be a booming economy. But remember, even if the stock market's doing well, because we have mountains of debt, because we're kicking the can down the road, because we're not dealing with the foundational problems, the cracks in the foundation of the U.S. economy, it's not really a good, safe economy, right? But what we see taking place, Trump is a deviation from that. The ruling class wants to see, like, how far can we take it before the public will revolt? How many freedoms can we take away before we need to pull back a little bit? And this lockdown phenomenon, they must be extremely elated that they have been able to completely control the day-to-day activities of entire populations. That is a good sign for the powers that be and a bad sign for you free-loving anarchists, voluntarists, libertarians, anybody that loves the liberty and freedom of movement. And so we see before our very eyes what at one point is speculation, martial laws coming, lockdowns, vaccinating the entire public, identifying slave surveillance grids, what Alex Jones called the prison planet, love him or hate him. He was way ahead of the curve. We see this coming forward before our very eyes. So now what are we going to do about it? I can't continue ranting on without giving you guys some solutions, some optimism, some hope, and what we can do forward. And now I've always been the eternal optimist. And I learned from Murray Rothbard in this essay, Left, Right, and the Prospects for Liberty. He's like, well, after we talked about all this control and socialism and this powerful governments, wouldn't one be pessimistic and have a bleak outlook on the future prospects for liberty? Well, when you take into account how things were for such a large period of history, especially in the Dark Ages, where people were hung and quartered, where we had the divine right of kings, we still have that in the form of statism, indoctrination through the public schools, and you have presidents on the wall, you make pledge to the allegiance, right? Pledge allegiance to the flag. Not my kids. But for the largest part of history, there was no expectation of freedom. The cat's been out of the bag now. And the American experiment, love it or hate it, has given people a very large amount of freedom. Just taking a perspective of the communication that I'm having with you right now and the message that I'm sharing. This doesn't happen in North Korea, China. This didn't happen in large part, unless you were a rebel like Thomas Paine and you were pamphleting. We have the internet here, and there's a mass sharing of ideas. We have decentralized cryptocurrency, even though it's being leveraged by ID 2020, the blockchain technology. But we have the ability to exchange amongst ourselves on a global level. And if you use XMR or Monero, the government can't do a damn thing about it. We have people in mass that are slowly but surely opting out of existing institutions. We have the proliferation of eco-villages and micro-communities all across the globe that are starting to network, right? So even though it may seem like, as I just explained, this group of people that wants to control the whole world population, reducing it substantially, ending the cycle of revolutions, that's all taking place. But that's always been taking place. And we live in a world where, at least in the West and in the United States of America, we enjoy, and I'm not going to oh, thank you, Master, for the freedom that I have. Because I see, as I said before, history is a series of revolutions, and the history can be defined as like the growth of tyranny or the growth of freedom, right? And we're at a phase in history where freedom is on the rise. And because we have the technological ability to communicate with one another, to pierce through their mainstream media BS that used to be able to just control us all without having to pamphlet and literally physically go hand things out, although we may need to be doing that sometime when the internet could be controlled, right? We'll just create our own mesh network. The further they clamp down, the easier it is for we free thinkers and liberty lovers to share with people. Remember back in the day when we're like, your computer's watching you and you better cover up that camera on your phone. Your phone's listening to you. And I was like, man, you're kooky, dude. That was in 1984. I read that in high school. That's not for real. And then we had like Edward Snowden and all the leaks through WikiLeaks. And it's like, you see, in many ways, the government is the best player on our team because they, while they're clamping down and trying to control people, they are showing the masses that the emperor wears no clothes. And to touch on the masses, where the masses don't matter. The masses are scared. The masses are begging for, like, my high school friends and stuff are shaming me for sharing a different opinion. And they're just loving the lockdowns. One of them even called 311 on some people that were going to a bar one night during the lockdown, whatever. The masses don't change the course of history. It's the people on the fringes that change the course of history. Unfortunately, it's the Illuminati elitists that are changing the course of history. They have tons of power, but it's also we free thinkers on the outskirts. We don't need a whole lot of resources like Jesus, Gandhi, or the Buddha changed a whole lot of stuff. MLK did as well. We just need to have that passion, that spirit, that drive, that motivation, that belief in ourselves, in the cause, in the message, and the belief in our fellow human beings that we can get through this. So let me tell you how we're going to get through this. One, natural health. It's absolutely imperative that each and every one of us double down on our efforts to live the most healthy and clean lifestyle we possibly can. That means avoiding sugar, avoiding fried foods when we can. Now, I'm not saying 110%, but start shifting down. So if you have just like pounding cakes and ice cream and soda and just drinking beer all day and fucking snorting blow and cocaine, like it's over here. And then here's like total purity. I don't even eat anything that has any semblance of non-goodness in it. It's like the idea is like start working your way this way. And when it's the weekend, maybe you'll go to set back. Limit your intake of processed foods. Try to eat organic as much as you can. Grow your own food. If you're on pharmaceuticals, talk with your doctor and see if there's any alternatives. See if you can work your way out. If your doctor isn't having that, then go visit a naturopathic doctor. Talk to your chiropractor. Engage in Eastern medicine. Take your vitamins. Take your minerals. Boost your immune system. Exercise. Get out in the sun. Love one another. Dance. Swim. Have the good life. Meditate. Yoga. Everyone needs to do that. And not only do we need to do it in our personal lives, but we need to tell everyone around us. And there's a beautiful thing. There's a different way to educate, right? David Friedman wrote this in The Machinery of Freedom. You can educate people verbally. You can write a book, or you can show them. And one of the best ways to persuade people to lead the natural, good, healthy life is to lead it yourself. And then you radiate so much just positivity and goodness, and your skin clears up and you're starting to get physically fit and your waist is slimming down and you have so much energy and you're like throwing your kids around. Everyone's like, oh my God, how's he do it? He's running around on the playground with his kids. I'm sitting here sipping my soda, scrolling on my Facebook, but he looks like he's a happy motherfucker. That's how you do it, folks. Spread the love, spread the word. The coronavirus and the reaction to it represents an opportunity for us to shift the way we do business, we do life, we do society, we do our own personal health. it's illustrated the vulnerability of the integrated interdependent systems. Now, it's being interdependent on a top-down hierarchical way because society, life systems are all interdependent, right? In a permaculture way. But how can we enter that interdependence in a synergistic way rather than a way that is contrary to the nature of reality, to the nature of the natural systems? How can we be a part of that natural system that isn't like a human-centric way of doing things, that's more synergistic and more respectful of the life around us, right? And one of those ways is to grow your own food, to decentralize your food systems. And that's why the irony of my girlfriend getting berated for wanting to grow food. It's, first of all, growing food and tending food cultivation is an opt-out. It's considered an essential activity for these shelter inns. Second of all, she was like, well, there's a lot of food vulnerability going on. They're like, there's no food vulnerability. She's like, have you been to the freaking grocery store lately? This is the time, folks. This is the time to change the way we do life, to decentralize the systems, to not be dependent on a supply chain that's totally top-down, hierarchical, completely vulnerable, where a lot of the food you get from the grocery store was imported from a foreign country. And we could grow that food perfectly fine here. Maybe if it's avocados, we'll get it imported from Mexico, and hopefully they're not cartel blood avocados like blood diamonds. The other thing is how we do the economy, right? Let's trade amongst ourselves. Let's empower those local businesses. We're seeing a massive shift here whereby the smaller businesses are being forced to shelter in to close their doors, but the larger corporations are getting trillions of dollars of bailouts, relief from the banks. So we're going to see a shift if we have the power to change this, but we're seeing a shift where the mom and pop shops are shuttering. And before you know it, they're going to be replaced with the big corporations and the big companies that are more resilient because they have shareholder money to use, because they have reserves, because they have their savings, and because they're getting bailed out by the banks and bailed out by the Federal Reserve. And that's a problem. So I've talked about health. I've talked about food systems, economies. Let's create local currencies. I don't like the hour-based currencies because somebody that's been a doctor for 20 years, for example, his hour is worth more valuable than a doctor that just started practicing, for example. But do whatever you want. Maybe you guys are more egalitarian. I don't know. Alternative economies, decentralized economies, trade amongst your neighbors, trade amongst your family and friends. Now let's talk about something that I think is really important. Also prepare. We've seen this happened. We're all preppers now. All the preppers on the reality shows that the shows try to make look kooky and weird, man, they are sure sitting a lot easier than the guys that are trying to wait in line at the grocery store 6 feet apart with no toilet paper in stock, right? I kind of rested on my laurels from 2006 when I was way more into prepping and had all the water stored up and the food stored up and had the canning food and stuff. But I sure as hell was ahead of the curve before Trump declared a national emergency, before Governor Abbott in Texas declared a national emergency, before the city of Austin declared a national emergency. After each of those three events, there's a huge influx of people like, maybe I should start taking this seriously. We were taking this seriously at the beginning of March, at the end of February, and got ahead of the curve. So prepare, right? And then the biggest thing we can do is shift the way we organize society. And this is something that we can do amongst ourselves without having to wait on the rest of the public to catch up. This is something that we can do even though the existing top-down hierarchical statist institution exists. This is something we can do even though there's those totalitarian diabolical manipulators that want to use world events in order to create more power and end the cycle of revolutions. This is something that we can do now. And you know what? This is something that we are doing now. And now I want to talk about freedom cells, an alternative way to organize society that's decentralized peer-to-peer. It works with small groups of 8 to 12 people organizing themselves, supporting one another through mutual aid. The small groups of 8 to 12, the reason why I say 8 to 12, this guy named Bob Podolsky, along with a guy named John David Garcia, they did the research and found that 8 people in a group leads to the most creativity, the least friction. Anytime you deviate from 8 one way or another, it becomes less effective, less creative, more friction. They also found that an equal number of women and men tends to be the most effective way to do things. So we say 8 to 12, could be 7, could be 9, could be wherever the hell you want. These are just our ideas here. So you get 8 to 12 people. You all come up with mutual goals. We're all going to have 3 months food stored. We're all going to have access to firearms, learn to use them safely, proficiently in order to defend ourselves, our family, and our community. We're all going to have encrypted communication. We're all going to have off-grid communication, maybe CB radios. We're all going to have a bug out plan that we can double check on. We make sure everyone bugs out. Maybe we bug out together. Maybe we don't. create these goals. We're all going to make sure that we're all staying healthy together and that we're being accountability partners for our exercise and fitness routines, right? You have the group of 8 to 12. You agitate and encourage the creation and proliferation of other groups of 8 to 12. So now you got your group here. You got your group here. You got your group here. Your group here. When you have 8 to 12 groups of 8 to 12, you form what I call a middle cadre. So this is the inner cadre. You're most dedicated to one another. You form a middle cadre that's dedicated to helping each other, but not as dedicated as you are to your initial group of 8. Once you have that group of 100 or so, you start putting it out. We're doing these shows. We're doing YouTube, all sorts of stuff. Everybody, try this out. Try this out. Now you have 10 groups of 100. You have 1,000 people. Now let me show you how this works when you have your group of 100. Everybody, let's all chip in $20 this month, and we're going to buy bulk storable food and distribute it amongst our network. Here's another way how it works. My family ended up getting – my family didn't get this, but let's say one family ends up getting coronavirus, and they have to shelter in, and their business goes under. They lose their job. You reach out to your group of 8. You reach out to your group of 100. Hey, guys, we're really struggling. We could use some help with groceries. First of all, we can't go to the grocery store. Can you guys do a supply run for us? But also financially, we're crippled right now. If you guys could give us a hand up during this situation, we'll be sure when we get back on our feet to support the network, to support those, everyone that helped us out. This is how this works. Eventually, this infrastructure could completely replace the existing top-down hierarchical infrastructure. This is beneficial if it's in a geographic area, if everybody's in close proximity, although that's not necessary. And I'm going to show you guys. This is an idea that I came up with some, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And then I had kids, and I kind of pulled back, and I was living in poverty for a good chunk of my life, and my kids when they were young, and I was like, I'm never going to live in poverty again. So I leaned heavy into entrepreneurship. Thankfully, entrepreneurship and all that dedication is starting to pay off. The persistence is starting to pay off. And I'm feeling a lot more passionate and motivated to share my gifts with the world and spread these ideas. But in that meantime, motherfucker Derek Bros took this idea, ran with it, and got it out to the freaking world, created websites, did speeches, podcasts, wrote books about this concept. And man, what was just an idea that I had sharing on some podcasts and giving a couple of speeches about, Derek and his network of people and his influence turned it into a global network. So I want to invite you to go to freedomcells.org. Remember, the whole first part of this story, and especially when I got into those totalitarian nuts that are trying to control populations and kill people, that's really dark and bleak and scary stuff. But I want to end on a positive note, because here we are right now in the real world where we have agorists, anarchists that are creating alternative means of organizing society that are based on freedom and decentralization. And gosh darn it, it's working. It's happening. It's not just an abstract concept. It's the real deal. So I would invite you in your community to start organizing and agitating for the creation of other freedom cells. And how do you do that? You go to freedomcells.org. Check out this map. Let me show you guys. Again, this is why I feel positive and optimistic for the prospects of liberty. We have people all across the country that are forming freedom cells groups. This isn't even every place on the map, because, of course, that's where Derek's from. He's from Houston. There's freedom cells there. We have our own little freedom cell, and I'm going to start organizing freedom cells now that I'm all passionate and excited. Now we have a super important reason. I think this actually switches on the map because we have freedom cells in Australia. We have freedom cells all over the planet. And it's up to you to join these freedom cells with us. So look, we have a Maine freedom cell here, Tulsa, UK, Phoenix. There's COVID-19 organizing groups, Dallas, Denton, Fort Worth, North New Jersey, New York, Houston. There's an Australia one. Look at that. People are like, well, why isn't there an Austin one? I'm going to add the Austin one and start agitating and encouraging the creation of this. El Paso. So look, this is just an idea of how things can be done. It doesn't have to be this freedom cell thing that's like got this agorist anarchist, like little tinge to it. It can be tinge, man. That's not the right word. It can be whatever the heck. If you're like left-leaning, if you're more progressive, if you're permaculturist, there's all sorts of eco-village networks that are already in place. The point is, it is time for us to abandon the existing way of living our life, managing our health, organizing society, organizing our economies. It's time to abandon that. And like Rahm Emanuel said, never let a good crisis go to waste. Everyone can choose how they perceive and what they focus on during this crazy time. You can go inward. You can get scared. You can freak out. You can get disillusioned about the prospects for liberty and human flourishing and just sit at home and watch Netflix. Or you could seize the opportunity to go out. Maybe you can't go out right now if you want to get arrested. To go out digitally. You could talk to your neighbors when you're out and about on a walk. And when this is all over with, people are going to be left like after they just got punched and they're about to be knocked out and fallen. They're going to be in a haze. They're going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. And you could bet your ass the ID 2020 Alliance is going to be coming in and offering up solutions. You can bet your ass local and state governments are going to be empowering their police state and their surveillance state. So I hope I can count on you to seize the opportunity when everyone is just dumbfounded and looking for a new way forward, to share the ideas that I've shared with you, to share your own ideas, to share the concept of freedom cells, where we create decentralized groups of 8 to 12 people. We encourage the creation of other groups of 8 to 12 people. Before you know it, we have 10 groups of 10. We have 100 groups. We've already created over in other parts of town. They have their own 100. Now we network. We have 10 groups of 100. Now we have 1,000 group. We're all communicating through this decentralized peer-to-peer messaging app. We linked it up with cryptocurrency or some other form of currency. So we're fundraising for one another. We don't even need medical health insurance anymore because we do it for ourselves. We help one another. The time is now. There's never been a better time in history. So I want to encourage you not just to watch this video, to share this video, but more importantly, I want you to take action. Because the future depends on us. The future generations depend on us. And I believe in the power of freedom. I believe in you. I believe in me. I believe in us together, right? So let's do it. John Bush, peace and freedom. This has been my perspective on the coronavirus. Ins and outs, ups and downs, problems and solutions. The time is now, folks. We can do this. Let's get out there and change the world. It's not the masses that are going to change the world. It's the remnant, those on the outside, those fringe thinkers that are going to pick up the pieces of society when it collapses and build something beautiful, rising like a phoenix out of the ashes of the old civilization and doing something new.